Now what happens? Now I'll explain all the four stages using this example, right? Now first we are explaining what is salience. Now to make a final decision of your family decision, your family would check the cost of the trip, type of accommodation, this is what we all do, tours and guides, safety aspects, the itinerary, which is basically the journey path, where we are going first, what are we going to, where are we going to stay, where are we going to eat, etc. Transit time from one place to another place, the time that is taking place, etc. Now these are some of the things that come top of the mind when we are planning a vacation, right? So we'll be doing this first. The above factors are called as salience, or they are the salient factors to the decision you want to make. Now what do you mean by salience? It simply means something that is important for me, something which I think is important. Two students are studying for the exams. One student wants to just pass. For him, that is salience. Another student wants to score. For him, that is salience. So whatever you have decided is your salience. Whatever you say are the various factors that you think has to be done, that's the starting point of your salience. Number of examples you can take. A home. Mom, dad and two children. Mom, early morning she gets up and she will be going through the kitchen to check out what are the things available to make a breakfast. Her thinking process is all with the breakfast aspect only, salience. So she'll be checking out, you know, whether we have onions, whether we have some potatoes, whether we have some bread, etc. So that is her checklist. Dad will be thinking of perhaps making up to the office. How early can I go? So how early can I get my things done at home? Maybe I do some work on my laptop, I wrap it up, then I go and have a, you know, my bath, do a little bit of prayers. So that will be his thinking, because that's what his goal is. The son who's missed, let's say he's doing an engineering or a professional course, he may start sitting and making his project or something alone in his room. Maybe he may listen to music or something. So all that he does is his salience. It makes sense to him. A daughter may be the second one. She is maybe still going to the college and she will have her homework to be done or some assignments to be submitted. So she'll be into that mood. So all the four people in the same home will have different saliences. Now we all know what happens in a home. Four people, four different saliences. Early morning, what happens? A sort of a Mahabharat. Everybody is pulling at their salience. Mom will say, look guys, come for the breakfast. Dad will say, hold on, I'm finishing my work. Son will say, I'll take it later at 11. And so on. I'm just giving you some idea about what is salience. Recognize it when you see it next. What is salience for you is not salience for your own brother or your spouse. So check out from what salience people talk. When I'm talking to you right now on this particular topic on integrated management, I have certain saliences which automatically come. They have to be there. So my salience is the way I am presenting the subject to you. Now the way I am presenting the subject, my salience, what is what I think is important, may not be what you think is important when you are absorbing me. Unless you are open to my salience. I'll repeat. I have some salient factors with which I am conducting this lecture. You are listening to me with what you think are your salient factors for absorbing my lecture. Now, in the bargain, what could happen? You may absorb partly and you may reject part. It's human nature. Instead, if you keep yourself open and look into the opposable part of your mind, which is the one which you're rejecting or whatever I say, then you say, hey, that also makes sense to me. I'm not saying it has to make sense, but you start looking into it. You don't allow the opposition in your mind to oppose and reject this. You'll take this and also put them together. So this is about salience. In this case, for example, the above factors are salient to the decision you want to make. Other factors not thought of by you have no relevance or importance to the decision, so you think. The housewife, for her, fixing a laptop of the husband is not at all in her thought. So it is not relevant to her, it is not salient to her at all. She would not think about whom to call for an AMC for a laptop. She would not think about, you know, what to do for my son's project, you know, report to be submitted tomorrow. That's not her area first and foremost. And she has not put her mind to it either. So what is salient to me, I only think of that, and I tend to exclude what is not salient to me. That's human thinking, conventional thinking, right? Taking it further, your vacation could be ruined. Your vacation may be ruined as you had hard drinking, talkative company in your tours, or it might have rained heavily on arrival in Kerala, bringing all the traffic to standstill. We all know it. When we go for outings and picnics and you know, long 3-day, 4-day vacation outside Bombay, outside the city where we live, what happens to us? We suddenly get unanticipated things coming to us. We never thought of it. We never ever thought of it. Now, why did we not think about it? Because it was not a part of our planning and our salience. It was not a part of it. So, I would have never expected that I'll be having a group of people around me who are boozing, drinking. And they're chattering and talking all around. My God. Imagine. And this can actually ruin your tour because you never thought of it. Had you thought of it, what would have happened? Probably your planning and your actions would have prevented those situations which you think could draw drinking people and also talkative people. Am I right? So there are certain things we do not think of, we take it for granted, or we don't think about it. So since we don't think about it, when the actual incident happens, we are taken aback. And since we have structured everything in a very proper manner, what happens is we do not accept that sudden things happening which we never expected. Right? Now, this is something which we need to get in touch with. And to your regret, what happens? Your vacation was ruined as you failed to consider these two factors. They were not on your radar. They were not on your thinking. They were not on your scanning screen. Right? When you were to make decision, they were not salient to you for the decision and they were your blind spot. Blind spot is, all of us have blind spots. It's in front of me, I can't see it. I just can't see it, it's there in front of me. All humans go through this. It's like the popular thing, you know, the husband keeps the specs up here and he's searching for it and the wife says, hold on, come here, and she puts the specs down. Some of you must be doing it, right? So, blind spot is right there, but you can't see it. You can't just register it into your thinking. And we are all into it. Everyone is into it. There's not a single person who doesn't have a blind spot. Ask a medical doctor, he'll tell you about it. Right? Next, we come to what is called as causality, the next process, next step. At the time of planning, I've said these are the various things that are important to me, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. Since I have said that these are important, what is my train of thinking? It will all be taking the first factor, second factor, third factor, fourth factor. For example, if I say that I want privacy for my family when I travel, salient. It's salient that my family should be in privacy when we travel. Causality will be what? I will design, I will go for those actions, that type of a tour operator, that type of a carriage which I'll be taking, wherein my family gets exclusive privacy. I will not think about mass transport where a lot of people are there. That's excluded from my thinking. So causality is what basically? The word we give to the pattern formed by relationship is causality. Because of my salience, I create a causality. Cause, from cause comes the word causality. Don't confuse this word for casualty. Casualty is different. Causality, right? So when you are into a salience, it creates a causality. So every other thing which I'm doing in the planning will be related to this. It's a network around every salient feature. I want privacy for my family. So all those things that are required for the privacy of my family, I will think about. I don't want to compromise on the quality of food, second salience. So all those things which have to do with not compromising the quality of food, I'll be thinking about. I may not consider the fact that that place may have, like we said, some drinking people who are making noise. I may not consider at this point of time. that is not a part of my causality. So when it is not a part of my causality, what happens to me? I don't even prepare for that eventuality. I don't prepare for that eventuality. It's not in my radar, right? And so, would a long trip cost more? Now we talked about costing. Would traveling companions increase my joy or make me regret for signing up for the tour, etc.? A causal map lays out the array, the structure of causal relationships at work in a given situation. The way you think, the way you give importance to certain things will bring about the causal map of what you're going to be doing. You will consider only those factors. If the salience for you is to ensure that your employees are coming exactly at 9 o'clock, you will do everything to create a causal map so that they come at 9 o'clock. Is it a fact or not? What is important to me, around that my entire life centers and all my actions are planned in that particular direction, right? With the causal map of salient features in our mind, we next turn to the architecture of the decision. Next comes the architecture, right? Now, what is architecture? Let's understand. Architecture, as the name indicates, is all about form and content and comfort. Form, content and comfort. I want to have a roof above me. I want to have a roof above me, right? I can simply have a roof. There are people in Mumbai, for example, who are living in the concrete pipes that are being used for some drainage purposes. Repair work is going on. So as an ad hoc player, they just go and stay there. Or some tin shed, you know, just a roofing on the top and something to sleep around. That's not what we're talking about. That's just a roof. But is a human being wanting just a roof? He wants something in the form of a comfort, a content and a form. He wants something little pleasant to himself. That's architecture. So while I am having certain salient features of where I want to go, I have also created the causality. Now I put them into an architecture, into something that makes me comfortable while going to the place, while going around the place, and everything that I do. It should have some system. It should have some sort of a form and content. It should be something which makes sense to all of us and which keeps us feeling good humored and enjoying ourselves. We just go, don't go there wantonly. Never. Right? So the architecture is basically the framework, the crystallizing of my causality into some sort of a framework of action to be. Right? So in simple decisions, the architecture is minimal because decision is binary, two choices. For example, should I go to the movie release this Friday or not? It is, should I go to the movie or not? Yes or no. But decisions are not binary. They are tertiary and they are multilateral. And since they are so, there is a different way of approaching it. Right? And so we take it further into taking this vacation example into discussion. Our vacation decision has multiple moving parts, variable factors like travel will affect my lodging may affect my activities which I'm going to take, and all these, considering all the parts together, is hard work and quite challenging and time consuming. Take them one by one. If you notice, one is related to the other, although they appear to be unrelated. And so what happens is there is a certain amount of connection between all the various things I'm going to be doing, right? But if we consider one factor at a time, say airfare, and catch an early flight that is cheap, we may lose a chance to see the major annual event that is scheduled for noon that day. You know, during the monsoon time, for example, when I'm traveling from, say, Mumbai towards the Konkan region, coastal Maharashtra, I could go by train. When I go by train, I may reach on time, but I may miss out on the beautiful monsoon that's around in the coastal area. And alternatively, if I decide to go by road, take my own car and my family or maybe friends, and I travel by the road, I'll enjoy the rains, but I may not reach on time. So this architecture is telling me that based on my salience and causality, what is the architecture I'm going to create? And that architecture is going to say, this is what I'm going to do, this is going to be my budget, these are the steps I'm going to take, I have a timeline on which I'll be putting the various activities, right? And then it could get chaotic for the person who's used to either or approach. He might get so ever overwhelmed by the process that he feels it's too chaotic. He might take a decision soon with compromises. Is it not true? Whenever you plan for a vacation, four members in the family, everybody sits together, then you fight all multiple options and choices and likes and dislikes. And then one person will get up and say, nothing doing, let's do it this way. Typical either or approach, you know, because it gets too overwhelming initially, right? So there comes a stage when it becomes so chaotic, you take this, you have that not coming in, if you take that, you have this not coming in, and so many things are connected with each other. Then what do we normally do? We eliminate a few of them and we say, chalo, let's take this decision. We do that. But when you keep doing this again and again, using the integrative approach, open approach, you'll soon find that vacation needs to be planned. Yes, of course it needs to be planned. But it need not be rigid in terms of, at this particular place only, I'm going to have my lunch. At this particular place only, I'm going to have my shelter. You'll keep options open. I go with a lot of groups to various places. You know, we go for rain picnics, we go for outings for, you know, 2-3 days, overnight and all that. And one of the things we do in a group is very clear. We make it a point to see that we keep ourselves flexible as it comes. Flexible not to the point of being loose. Flexible to the point of having an architecture in which we say, fine, we plan for this. If it doesn't happen, let's see what is available there. And whatever is available, make the best of it. I can give you a number of examples wherein this happens so well that there's a lot of joy in exploration. Integrative thinkers are explorative in the way they think. They explore the choices available in a situation that is presented to them. They don't look at a situation from an either-or approach, saying that, though, this is not what I expected, sorry, I can't do it. They say, fine, this is available, let's see what we can do best. And they go around it and they make things happen. And while doing that, they explore and they get a joy of exploration and also a discovery. That's the beauty about it, right? Now, it could get chaotic for the person who's used to either or approach. He might get so overwhelmed by the process that he feels too chaotic. He might take a decision soon with compromises. I have decided to do this and I know I cannot get that, but that's okay. This is how we do. You cannot get everything in life. Very common expression we have gone through, right? And now we talk about the last process, the last element in this, which is called as resolution. With the architecture of the decision ready, we come to the resolution as to whether to go to Rajasthan, Maharashtra or Kerala. Three choices we talked about, right? Then finally, we'll say we have worked out all the options, salience, causality, architecture of Maharashtra, Rajasthan and Kerala. And then we'll decide that should we go here or here? It's possible that we may drop all the three and go somewhere else. We may decide to cancel all and start all over again from in different locations. I'm sure many families do this. Thus, our thinking process allows us for discarding the set of alternatives and starting all over, which is why we have the dotted arrows in the next diagram heading backwards towards the cascade. So I'll go over to the next diagram. And here is what is a beautiful, like a flow chart. You can actually read this and make yourself clearly understood about what the process is. At the bottom on the left hand side is salience. Salience is simply asking a question, what features do I see as important? Underline the word important. So whatever I see as important, that takes me towards the causality. How do I make sense of what I see? How do I make sense of what I see means? What are the factors that I consider for taking a decision? Finally, I come to the architecture. So these decisions, in what order will I do them? What will I do in what order? And having done that, I come to the action. And after the action is over, I get some results. How will I know when I'm done, when I'm through with it? I get some results. Okay. Now, usually what happens, people stop here. Let us say that I chose to go to Kerala. Let us assume that I chose to go to Kerala. Now, when I went to Kerala, I came across certain surprises here and Kerala was not a good experience. It was a bad experience. Let's assume. Since it was a bad experience, what do normally people do? They'll drop going to Kerala for all times to come. Not only that, they'll give a lot of critical views against Kerala. Quite possible. Now, instead, if they sit down and ask themselves a very hard question, where are the places where we could have made some differences? Then they go back to the architecture. What is it that we did? In what framework? Now, what led to this framework? What are the causes of the framework? The causality? And the causality came from where? The salience. Could we relook into the salience? Could we relook into the salience of what we thought is important for Kerala? I must have thought about three things important for Kerala and stood by it with limited knowledge. But now I got experience behind me of having visited Kerala. And so what I do is, I got not three inputs, I may have six inputs. So with the six inputs which are salience, I have new causality, new architecture and new resolution. And when this keep repeating again and again, you will find yourself at ease taking decisions. Okay friends, now this is the framework which is very important for us to understand and easy to practice as well. Consider all those various things you're doing, which is your salience, your causality, your architecture, resolution, every day you're doing it. See the times when you're getting stuck up and feeling frustrated. Integrative thinkers do not get frustrated because they do not see a mess as a chaos. They see it as a complexity. So first start doing that. Then when you start doing it, you will find day by day, when new things are happening, you will find that you are in taking charge. That's leadership. So I take you to the next subtopic in this chapter, which is called as a process of thinking and deciding. Process of thinking and deciding. We took that example of the vacation and we spoke about the four different steps. And now we are talking about how the thinking and deciding takes place when the steps are being taken. Right? So when we, whatever we may decide in that particular scenario, we arrive at our choice by considering a set of features which we consider salient or important, thus creating a mental model of the causal relationship among those features. Okay, arranging those causal relationships into an architecture intended to produce a specific outcome and thereby reaching a resolution of the problem at hand. With different salience, causality and architecture, we would definitely arrive at different outcomes. In short, what we have done in this slide is we are trying to sum up of the whole thing, right? Now, the above four stages constitute the process steps that act as a framework for the integrative thinking and action. This is what I mentioned some time back, right? Now, the question is, how do integrative thinkers actually think? In general, integrative thinking follows a four-step process, which is what, again, we are explaining in a different way. The step one is salience, which seeks to define the relevant aspects of a problem. Underlined relevant aspects of the problem. What is relevant to me at this point of time of my thinking is what it becomes salient to me, right? A person will search only for what he wants is what it means. For example, a man wants to buy a car and his budget is rupees 7 lakhs. So what would he do? He will look for cars which are focused only 7 lakhs and below, right? In fact, you see cars every day around you. But the day you want to buy a car, you suddenly see the cars around you. Is it not a fact? Whatever is pervading in your consciousness, you can see around, right? So that puts a salience to it. So in the step two, second step, what happens? This, we come across causality. It seeks to determine the relationship between related and clearly seemingly unrelated parts of the problem. In a causality, we talk about what is important to us and those thoughts become a part of the causality. Also, some thoughts or some things which are not related, it does come to our mind, but what we do is, conventional thinkers, we reject it. That is what we say, seemingly unrelated parts of the problem also, the relationship we try to map. Where there's a salience, causality automatically follows. For example, a man wants to buy a car and his budget is 7 lakh rupees. All aspects of these two salient points would be in his thinking, talking and acting, etc. Right? Next comes architecture. Architecture involves the creation of a model that outlines the relationships defined in earlier two steps. For example, how does he go about buying the car? The step-by-step process once causality factors are mapped. Already I've explained it earlier. Now this is just going as a part of the flow of the slides, right? And the last step is resolution. After the model creation, the preparatory and the journey towards the goal. For example, in case of the purchase, after the steps are chalked out, what resources we need at each step, the actions to be taken, which would determine how well we are towards the goal or how far. The architecture is created, what to buy, from whom to buy, which model, etc. And then all the resources that are mobilized and the action that is taken is a resolution part of it. Right? The actual action steps. These are the four different ways in which integrative thinkers actually think and act. Now, let's take the example of Isidore Sharp and the Four Seasons Hotel, which we explained in chapter number 1. Taking this example, we'll see how this gentleman applied all the four process steps. The background, just to recap, just to refresh, while working on the side of a motel, a wayside inn, formed an ambition of building a chain of motels of his own. He had a motel and then he wanted to build a chain of motels on his own. After endless rejections by lenders and developers, finally secured funding from friends and family to open a 125 rooms Four Seasons motor hotel in 1961 in downtown Toronto, Canada, with a tariff of $12 a night. Now, these details are not so important as much as what he did. Okay, when Isidore began his project, hoteliers had two options. When he started his project of setting up a motel, which is basically a wayside hotel meant for people to stay overnight, just one night overnight stay, right? There were two options available. One was of a small motel, which he started with less than 200 rooms. And the other one was a large downtown hotel with over 750 rooms catering to business travelers, where guests would have extensive amenities. This we have already explained in chapter number 1. The two choices. The large luxurious convention center and the wayside motel, which is basically frugal, which gives you the comforts and the warmth of a home. These are the two choices that were available. The alternatives was, Isidore had two options. This option of a small motel, which he started with less than 200 rooms. It offered its guests modest amenities, not much than a TV in the room, an ice cream machine down the hall, and a bar or a restaurant in the lobby. Startup costs were modest and per room operating costs low. This offered warm, intimate atmosphere, friendly service and welcoming restaurant and bar, certain to make it a favorite watering hole for business people. In short, this was the bare minimum available, which he created, right? Now, the second option was a large downtown hotel with over 750 rooms, huge one, catering to business travelers, and guests would have extensive amenities including a conference facility, multiple restaurants and banquet rooms. And now they even offer fitness centers, business center and teleconferencing facilities and maybe more. Isidore's fourth hotel was such hotel with 1,600 rooms and has and a huge shopping arcade. It was a larger one. Like the first one, this too was popular and profitable. This is what was actually going on. Both the options had their advantages and distinct drawbacks. For all its comforts and intimacy, small motel would not generate revenues to fund extensive amenities, which were primary needs of a business traveler, like meeting rooms, teleconferencing, etc. Large hotels generated revenues for all the amenities, but in the process, they became cold and impersonal. We all know, when you go to a very large, a five-star hotel, there's a lot of smile, there's a lot of nice, good things that people talk to you. But at the end of the day, it's all driven by a process behind wherein they are being paid to do that. And it's basically a place which gives you a warmth, but not the type of a warmth which has got flexibility. Not much. There are certain things they do, but the warmth which you experience in a small place, in a motel, is something which is seemingly lacking in a large five-star hotel. But what you get in a five-star hotel in terms of amenities, facilities, etc., is something that is lacking in the small motel. These are the two differences, the pluses and the minuses of both these formats, right? Now, taking it further, for further expansion, Isidore mulled his next move. This was the turning point. He said, let me do something different. And he did not want to compromise on the benefits of the two models business travelers needed to be comfortable with. Rather than choose one of the existing dominant models and accept the downside it entailed, Sharp used his opposable mind to hold two models in his head, roll them around and design a creative resolution of the tension between them. He said, let me take A, let me take B and combine them together and come out with something different. He tried to combine the best of the small hotel with the best of the large hotel, and he would have a medium-sized hotel, big enough to bring an extensive array of amenities, but small enough to retain personalized service and intimacy. A combination of A and B, somewhere in between. Right? In London, he had London's Inn, which, because of London's tough constraints, had only 220 rooms and suites. It was smaller than a luxury hotel and gave Sharp a glimpse of the intimacy, luxury and the comfort possible on an in-between scale. But this scale, which assured personal service, was causing revenue constraints. It was not remunerative enough. It was not getting more, they were not getting more money and profits out of it, right? An inn would earn only thin or low profits, wafer thin or low profits. This was the scenario. Sharp refused to accept traditional economics and argued if Four Seasons was to provide extra comforts to guests, it can charge price premium for its better than competitors' services. This is something unheard of at that point of time. I'm giving you additional amenities, additional facilities than the frugal one available, and for that I'm going to charge you more. Would people come? Many people felt that this is a very bad model, it will not work. But Isidore Sharp being Isidore Sharp, he had his own way of looking at his model, and then he said, let me try it out. Much to the resistance of many people at that point of time who said that this model will not work, right? From this substantial price premium, he would boost revenue per room to the point where the hotel could afford top of the line amenities. But before he could ask guests to pay a super premium room rate, Sharp understood Four Seasons hotels would have to offer business travelers entirely different kind of service in return. Okay. Now, the salience at Four Seasons is what we are now covering. What did an entirely different kind of service look like and feel like? What did an entirely different kind of service look and feel like? This required thinking differently than the average hotelier. That meant going beyond what was conventionally salient. Sharp could not stop after location, staffing levels, room size, furnishings. He needed to go beyond. If he were to follow the conventional way of looking at setting up a hotel, then he would have thought of the usuals. The usuals are location, staffing levels, room size, furnishing, etc. But he had to think something more than that. If you're a conventional hotelier, you would have thought only in this direction and be done with it. There wouldn't be more ideas in your brain. But he ensured that whatever opposable ideas were coming, he also started thinking and taking himself in that direction. And thereby he integrated both of them. His opposing ideas and the ideas which are in line with the hotelier's thinking, right? So, this is a pic shot of one of the locations. And Sharp's salience became more nuanced. It was more multifaceted, multicolored and human. And at the same time, it had a personal touch. His guests traveled extensively, more than they would have wanted. They longed for a feel as if they were they were home or in the office. They wanted a combination of these two things, right? In Sharp's words, quote, we studied, surveyed and listened to our customers. Most were business executives, often pressured by time and the need to be productive. Luxury then seen chiefly as architecture and decor. We decided to redefine luxury as a service, a support system to fill in for the one left at home and in the office, unquote. This is what he had to say. So he was making himself think in an integrative manner. He says, while I would like to give them the comforts, I would also like to give them something affordable with a personal touch. And that's where, you know, he started creating a new model. To replicate that at home feel, Four Seasons offered shampoo in the shower, 24-hour room service, bathrobes, makeup mirrors, hair dryers, etc. Overnight shoe shines, dry cleaning, pressing and shaving kit as well.